am the last of the Time Lords.
There's as many dimensions as there are atoms in the universe.
Oh my, Bridgerton!
That is amazing!
Oh, right,
spoilers.
The Discussing Network presents Discussing Who, a Doctor Who podcast. I'm Kyle Jones, and I want to start this episode by welcoming back Lee Shackelford. Mr. Shackelford, how are you?
What? Did they let him out? Hi, that's me.
Hi, me.
that's somebody else. Hey there. I'm a little discombobulated. A lot going on in my world right now, but glad to be here with you guys talking about these two episodes, I believe we'll do.
All righty. And without further ado, the one, the only, Clarence Brown.
Yes, I'm glad to be here with you guys. As Lee said, just reiterate everything he said. Glad to be here again talking Doctor Who.
Yeah.
We got new Who to talk about.
New Who.
New Who.
So I want to give a big shout out to Wynn Grace in the chat. Thank you again for being with us as always. And in the chat for the first time in a while, well, actually the first time in chat, but the first time with us live in a while, our friend Nicole Mazza. Happy, glad you're here.
Hey, Nicole. Hello, folks.
So Nicole and I had an interaction earlier about an article that I wrote on our Patreon account, and I am so glad she's here because I was going to mention her in the conversation that I want to have, because I went down a rabbit hole this weekend. I went down the rabbit hole of going to Twitter, going to Facebook, going to Threads, going to all the different social media that are out there and reading everything. And I was disheartened, totally disheartened. And Lee, I think you did that some when, we had the Chibnall era where you just finally had to say literally no more.
I've learned my lesson.
And here's where I got disheartened from. It was not people giving ideas and thoughts and introspective ideas and thoughts about why they didn't like it. It was, oh, well, Doctor Who is woke, period. Oh, R.I.P. Yeah. Doctor
like
Who.
Like it hasn't always been, yeah.
Yes. And this is not my Doctor Who, period. Mm-hmm. What I like is the interaction that Nicole and I had on our Patreon. Nicole can go through and say, I want to like, but this is what I don't like about something. Mm-hmm. And list why. I love that. And I can respect that because the three of us, we don't always agree, but we can listen to each other and come back and say, oh, well, you changed my mind, or, oh, mm-hmm. I see where you're coming from. So for that reason alone, so glad to have Nicole in here, because I know this was not her cup of tea.
Yeah.
These two episodes, it may not be you guys' cup of tea, it may not be mine, who knows? Before I move on, one thing I want to say is my favorite negative comment was somebody going off on the fact that the new Doctor is an American actor.
Right.
End of the podcast. Thank you all for joining.
Yes, right.
The Doctor is an American.
That's enough reason right there, yeah.
That's hilarious.
He's not Scottish Rwandan. He's an American actor. So with that said, Lee Shackelford, there's something you always like telling people, which is what?
Say thank you for joining us. We know you got other places you could be, other things you could be listening to, and you've chosen to listen to us, and we're very grateful. We hope it's because we're successful in our sub-branding that we're We're the positive guys. You're not going to hear us kvetching about, you know, something that we don't like. I mean, Superman puts his boots on one at a time like anybody else. Just to bring up another stupid thing that people are arguing about in social media right now. So anyway, yeah, Nicole is in the chat saying, "Shoot, he's American."
You didn't know?
Yeah. Didn't you know that?
And Clarence, if there are people who are listening or watching for the very first time, what would you like to tell them about how they could find us?
Yeah, I always tell them that there's always a twist in the end. Wait, no. There's a call to action. The call to action is that you can support the show by subscribing, leaving a review, or telling a friend. If you have a review idea, please send that in along with anything else you want us to know to discussingwho@gmail.com or hit us up at discussingwho on any and all social media.
In other words, press the button.
Indeed. Yeah. Indeed, like pressing buttons. And I'm going to press the button on Christmas. We got confirmation today that Joy to the World Christmas episode is written by Stephen Moffat.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome.
So I still speculate. Does that mean spoilers?
Yeah.
That would make you very happy.
It would indeed.
Yeah.
It was Christmas the last time we saw her. You know, The Husbands of River Song was a Christmas episode. So, who knows? But a couple of other things, some feedback that I want to give. I see Morgan Lee in the chat. Thank you for being here. Also, Lei Jen, and I hope I'm pronouncing that correct. Thank you for being here. And Tasha from After the Snap Movies and TV.
Excellent.
Again, thank you for being here. We did get some feedback from someone by the name or that goes by ML who sent us some awesome, awesome feedback on our reviews of the Zygon inversion, Zygon inversion invasion, saying that they really appreciated our take and our call out. And Lee, it was actually your call out to the Palestinian conflict, the Israeli conflict, and that how much they appreciated that. So,
yeah, and they were speaking as a Palestinian Jew, which, it just felt good to feel heard and supported. And I said, man, if that's not what we're here for, then we're doing the wrong thing. So I love it. Yeah, I'm going to cherish that email for a long time.
Indeed. So without further ado, as they say, for anyone who is here who has not seen the first, and wow, I just realized something. This is the first time we've done two episodes in one review. Interesting. But it's also the first. Maybe? Yeah. And it's not, but it's also the very first time that we've ever got two episodes on the same day. Ever.
For sure.
I think we've done some two-parters together.
We have done two-parters, but I think we've broken them up. Maybe.
Well, maybe not. I think we've done both, but I don't know. After 300-plus episodes, who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
But what I do know is, if you have not seen this episode, these two episodes, put us on pause. Go out. Watch the episode. Come back. Because from this moment forward, spoilers.
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 Spoilers. Spoilers.
Spoilers. Alrighty, the spoiler warning has gone out, and we are back to review two episodes, which are Space Babies and The Devil's Cord. These are the first two episodes of the 2024 series of Doctor Who, first streaming / airing on the 10th and the 11th of May, 2024. These episodes starred Shuti Gatwa as the 15th Doctor and Millie Gibson as Ruby Sunday. Clarence Brown, I'll start with you. Summary view for Space Babies. What say ye?
Well, as spoiler, as you may know, I didn't particularly love Space Babies. I will say that oftentimes, as I always say, watching it again gives me a different understanding of it. But, you know, I loved everything surrounding the episode. I love that it was the introduction we always expect with a new doctor and a new companion, onboarding these season one viewers to Doctor Who. You know, it hit all the high points there. Shooty is magnetic. Millie Gibson is also magnetic. So I loved all those elements. The story itself, my problem is not with the actors, not with their portrayal of the characters. It's just the story to kick off this new season. Well, I guess it is episode two, so maybe not to kick off, but it was underwhelming. It was underwhelming to me. And I mentioned this in our chat. We Kyle, you talk about Sleep No More so much, about how you hate it so much. This episode gave me echoes of Sleep No More in a lot of ways. So
you actually even asked, was this a sequel?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Boogeyman. But yeah, ultimately, you know, I could go back and really pick out some points that really made it a fun episode. But I was just expecting to be floored. You know, all this hype, all this press behind this new season. I expected to be floored in the first episode. So just slightly underwhelmed.
Lee Shackelford, what say ye?
Yeah, I would say my experience of it was more of a mixed bag. There are things in it that I just love and adore, and things where I was also just sort of laughing. I would just say, "What? Really?" But it is uncanny, just because. Just what? When did you drop the our review of Sleep No More?
Over the weekend.
Yeah. So just a few days ago. So I've been listening to that, and it's, you know, remembering all those things. And it is uncanny how much this resembles Sleep No More. It's very strange, including the conversation about how nobody says space this and space that, except apparently in the case of babies. So when they are space babies. I have not figured out what my rating is on this yet, because I went back and forth about it quite a lot, but I don't know. I'm not willing. I think I've decided that it's an ethical, moral decision that I'm not willing to jump on anybody's bandwagon of, I hate this and Doctor Who is dead and they've ruined my favorite show. It's never that. So calm down. But yeah. Is this my favorite ever? No.
No. So here's how I judge it. I enjoyed the episode on first watch. I realized, however, on second watch that I enjoyed the Doctor and Ruby much more than I enjoyed the story. And I imagine putting another pairing. If I were to take the Doctor 15 and Ruby out of the equation and insert another companion and Doctor pairing, mm-hmm. and not having the dynamic chemistry that I saw between those two actors and their portrayal of the characters, I don't think I would have enjoyed it very much. I think I would have much more felt Sleep No More vibes, because it would have been underwhelming. So the story itself to me kind of underwhelmed, but Shooty and Millie Gibson kind of saved it for me as far as overall view. And that being said, let me bring in a couple of quotes and things from our chat. And this is another reason I like different opinions. Our friend Janet Hall says Space Babies was weak, the writing was poor, and there was no chemistry. I can respect that. Mm-hmm. Nicole says, and I do agree with this, the baby's mismatch of facial expressions and line was super unsettling.
Yeah, I look forward to our talking more about that. That was...
And let's see... Space Babies was fine, but felt like a mid-season episode. Totally,
bingo.
Totally agree. Yes.
Couldn't agree more, yeah.
And the Uncanny Valley was real in this episode. Yeah. That's too funny.
It's a problem.
All right, so let's talk about the baby's mismatched facial expressions. What do you guys think of the babies? And Lee, Bring that up. What do you think?
Well, all of us who have had babies, I'm appealing to Clarence to back me up on this because he has one now and immediately. When we are that age, our eyes are super expressive.
Yes.
And it seems like a howling error to give these babies, to photograph them with a sort of flat affect because they're on a TV show. They have no idea what's going on. And then change their mouths so that they can speak like toddlers. That just seems such a bizarre choice to me. So, well, we didn't have time and money to do their eyes too. Well, then don't do it.
Yes.
is it just me or it's like, why don't their eyes say what they're saying?
No, I totally agree. And I would argue as a young kid, your facial expressions is how you communicate
exactly.
For the most part.
If you don't have language.
Yeah. So I feel like they would have done better making it more like a telepathic or somehow relaying their thoughts telepathically, maybe, because just the facial expressions was so off-putting. It took me completely out of the episode. And also, how old do we think these babies are? Like a year, maybe?
That's a problem, too. Yeah. Janet is saying, weren't they supposed to be 6 years old? The doctor says, they abandoned ship and left you guys behind. I don't know why, but they left the birth machine running, so you lot grew up, but you stayed the same size. Mm-hmm. And that's the only explanation for that we get. No other even attempt at that. And I'm like, but then how old are they? And why did they – why did that – wait, go back. Which just to me reveals that the only reason for this whole conceit is so we can have – babies going around in motorized prams and that they're right. In running the ship and so yeah. They're aren't they cute? And
see, Wingrave says the doctor can speak baby. Couldn't they have just skipped that?
Yes. And I would argue that the babies look like they could be anywhere from 10 months to maybe a year old.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit smaller, but my child was walking at 10 months, walking around at in 11 months. She's causing havoc everywhere. So
yeah.
You know, the hover rounds, it works for the story, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and Nicole says, I like when the babies were like, I'm so happy. And yet they look like they were about to cry. I mean,
mommy. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know what I really wanted? I wanted one of them to say, and I know they said, you're my mommy and daddy. I wanted one of them to say, are you my mommy?
It's an opportunity missed.
Oh, no, this is an opportunity missed. Janet Mommy. Says, I had hoped they would be Dalek hybrids. Oh, that would have been funny.
It's a different episode.
Oh, that would have been funny. What did you guys think of the scene between the doctor and Ruby on the spaceship before they actually meet the babies, this reminiscent of Nine and Rose in the second episode where they're looking at the Earth and it's about to burn out. Spoilers for episode 2 of 2005 yeah. series.
Right.
But, you know, we get that same vibe here. What did you guys think of this?
Yeah. And for Rose, it was the most terrifying thing she'd ever seen. What did you mean bringing me here? So, yeah, I almost expected it to go that way. This one was okay. But, yeah, you have to think of it. It's staged the same way and everything.
Clarence, what did you think? Did you like this episode? I mean, this sequence?
Yeah, well, I like it in the sense of the wonder of just seeing the human race continue at this point. So I think that was a good – not really lesson, but a good point of view for our companion in this episode. See that the human race carries on.
Yeah.
They're still fighting and we're not dead yet.
Yeah. And for fans of the classic series, you got to think of the doctor in Ark in Space talking about the human race reaching out and so on. It's ready to outsit eternity. They are indomitable. I want to back up even further if we can, because we saw this in the trailer and so on, but this episode kind of begins with a reference to Ray Bradbury's story, Sound of Thunder. which people know even if they don't, if they haven't read the story or they don't know the title, but it is a time travel story in which somebody goes back to the primordial past and steps on a butterfly. And when they come back to present, everything is radically and irrevocably changed. And that's a lovely poetic idea, and it makes a lot of sense. And it's one of the reasons why I hope we haven't developed time travel, because that kind of thing will be rampant. But we're, one of the things I think this episode does really well is that it introduces us to all the rules about Doctor Who. It introduces us to the Doctor. We even get to the point of him having two hearts. We kind of, you know, and so on. But we got to that thing, and then he says, oops, and we run back inside, and we flip the butterfly compensation switch, which is going to do what exactly? There are no consequences for things that we do in the past now? Is that...
Maybe I read it wrong or watched it wrong, but I thought when he reached down and blew into, you know, at the butterfly and it was alive again, that that corrected things.
Well, it did. I mean, it corrected that.
Right. Yeah.
But he wants to make sure this doesn't happen again, so he flips that switch. So I presume in Father's Day, when Rose interacted with her father after being told not to, I guess the butterfly compensation switch was off that day too.
Hey, different console.
I'm just saying, so what are the rules then? It's mucking about with the rules. I'm with Nicole. She kind of wanted Butterfly Ruby to be the new companion.
I liked Butterfly Ruby.
I really like the look of that too.
I mean, I know
that would be more interesting.
Yeah, but you know what? I know that look. It would have been, you know, hellacious having to put on that makeup every episode.
I assume she would like to do that once. Yeah,
but that line about you're not telling me I'm wrong. Don't tell me I'm wrong, or I'm going to have to kill you.
No. Also, apparently the Doctor can breathe life into the dead. I think that has pretty huge implications too.
10th Doctor did that actually.
But I thought they're going to show his regeneration energy when he did that.
Yes. You know, that's right.
That would have been a perfect time to show that.
And I would have accepted that as an explanation because his regeneration is still pretty recent. So,
So in this scene, we're establishing that the Marty McFly effect is a thing. You change something, you instantly, if this compensation switch isn't on, you instantly see the change. That kind of threw me for a loop. I kind of wish they would have did that because we immediately in the next episode, spoilers here, we have this scene where he says that because you travel with me, it doesn't affect you.
Yes.
So, like, didn't we just establish that it does? And they kind of threw me off with that.
That's my problem. Could we pick one? It's a cute scene to see her as a butterfly, but.
But does she sting like a bee?
What ultimately was the point? If they're protected by the TARDIS, then we didn't need to do that. And I don't do it anyway.
We did for lols.
We just did it for lols. So.
So another thing that I did like, and this was something that was, you know, maybe not done for at lols or whatever, was when they were looking at the screen, we saw Mavity yet again.
Yes.
So,
did we?
They're being consistent with that. That was cool.
Yep.
So tell me, you know, we've talked about we didn't like the babies themselves. So tell me what you thought about what was going on. And by the way, if you're looking at the video, this, out of all the babies, was my favorite of the babies, Captain Poppy. She was just a freaking adorable.
So I see a great career ahead for her.
Yes. There was just something about his interaction with that particular baby I just thought was like spot on, great writing, very cool. For me, I really, really enjoyed that. But we find out that the story module or the story program has gone out of control and they create not the boogeyman, but the bogeyman. So let's just say what it was. It was Snot and, you know,
it's what, snot monster.
Whatever. Snot monster.
Just like an eye booger monster.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's it. We're going to get boogers one way or the other.
So thoughts. Clara.
Drowsy dust.
What did you think?
I really like that we're kind of playing with this computer that is kind of the nanny or operating as sort of the nanny in of these kids along with the lone scientist. But it just kind of bothers me that it can rationalize that it needs stories and it needs this monster to satisfy the fictional part of their lives, but yet it can't create like a caretaker. It can't create something to get them off of this space station, but it can create the boogeyman or bogeyman.
Yeah.
I don't know.
See, if in the US we said booger man, then the whole joke would work for us, but we don't. So I thought that was interesting that the whole thing relies on the British bogeyman and calling snot bogeys. Yeah. And that seems odd to me since this is supposed to be our big American launch, you know, of the new Who, featuring that fine American actor, Judy Gatwa. It's one of those jokes that works better on paper, I think, the bogeyman. But anyway, it is. It's another thing. It's just uncannily like Sleep No More, which was, you know, I don't know, nobody's favorite episode of.
Yeah. So here for me, I noticed in the two. Well, and I did go back and try to watch it again twice more from the original watch. And I noticed that I stopped watching or fast forward through all the exposition about what the monsters are, that they're snot monsters, even though there's him laughing at Ruby and whatnot. I fast forward up until the very end. So I don't like that. I'm usually not a fan of toilet humor. I'm not a fan of bodily function humor. And that's just not me personally. I don't really get that. I mean, I get that it can be funny, I just personally, just that's not my cup of tea. And I didn't really like that.
So I didn't even notice this. Wynn Grace pointed this out in his review, Wynn Grace Project. You should check him out. That the spaceship is a big butt. I didn't really get that the first time.
Oh boy.
Like,
I need to go back and look at that again. Yeah. And we're going to be saved by a methane blast. Yeah.
Yeah. Terrible. Terrible.
Yeah. Yeah. And the visual, and I know, I mean, I'm like, you really wasted that much money on doing the visual of a fart, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just call it what it was. You really just,
it was a big giant
space fart. Really? I did not like. So for that, I'm all on the boat, the boat or whatever. I'm not liking, you know, I'm on that boat. I'm on the board. I've written it down or whatever. I don't like it. But in contrast to that, loved their energy and their interaction, there being Ruby and the doctor. So before we move on to the Devil's Chord, any other items that you would like to bring up about Space Babies?
As silly as this episode is, there's a little touch of politics that I appreciated.
Oh, yes, please.
Coming from Alabama, as I do, that it's against the law to shut off the parthenogenesis machine. So once they've got it running, they can't stop it because that would be murder. So instead, we'll abandon the babies there. Yep. Mm. Message received.
But they don't want to pay for them.
But they're also not going to pay for them. Mm. And for those who don't know, in Alabama right now, we're stuck with the fact that the Alabama Supreme Court has judged that fertilized eggs frozen at near zero temperatures are people. And so, yeah, so they've stopped that whole process because if you're selling them, then you're a slaver. So that means that they're also defunding all the projects, which means that all those frozen eggs are going to start thawing out. And that's not their responsibility. So they've created this stupid conundrum about this definition of life, but yeah, the joke now is that in Alabama, an egg is a chicken. But it's not funny to the parents of, you know, who have these babies. So,
well, speaking of, and you guys say I am good at segues. Speaking of not knowing if the chicken came before the egg, the babies were all about destroying the monster. But all of a sudden, Nicole brings up a very good point. I also get why the doctor wanted to save the creature, but why did the babies want to save the monster so suddenly?
I kept waiting. I kept thinking that I missed it. That explanation was there and I just missed it. So when I watched it again, sure enough, it's not there.
And
suddenly they had the sophistication to understand that this is necessary for their development to have scary stories and with a hero on it. But,
and Janet brings up a good question. Where did the diapers come from?
Well, they're being fed and everything by the machine, apparently.
Well, true. True.
And that, right. So.
And Wingrave says it's like they took all the criticism of the Slitheen and the Absorbiloff and doubled down on it.
And can I make a comment real quick, Lee, what you were just talking about, that message that they put in this episode? To me, if you're going to do it, that's the way to do it. If you know the details of the message that they're giving, you can dig into it a little bit, but otherwise it'll just go over your head. So just a wonderful, wonderful way to put in a message in our sci-fi. Also, I love, you mentioned it earlier, Lee, the message of push the button that kept being iterated. You know, it was a callback, of course, for this episode, but I wondered if that would lead to something else. It might be something we see later on, but I love how we kept going to that in this episode. I thought that was very good. And also, and maybe this is more of next episode. I'll bring it up when we start that discussion. But the doctor is genuinely scared.
Yeah.
In this episode. And it continues on in the next episode. So I have more to say on that.
All right. So I'm
baffled by the fact that he's scared. He's puzzled by that.
So I have a question, and I did not look this up or ask any of the AIs that we have access to now to answer this question for me. Because, Lee, I wanted to ask this question to you. In cinema, is there a decibel that they use when crafting cinema that incites fear to the audience?
Yep.
There is.
And there's even been court cases about whether or not you should be able to do that, just like oscillations of bright lights and certain colors.
Okay.
So, yeah. Because it's genuinely troubling to some people more than others. So,
with that being said, I'm wondering why the doctor may have been afraid, at least in that episode. Was it because the computer program, because it was trying to create this perfect entity that would scare the children, was using a sound, the roar that the creature made, was using a decibel that would incite fear?
I thought that was the explanation. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
No, okay. Cool.
That's what he said. That's the fear. You know. What do you call it? Vibration, whatever.
And before we move on, I have to mention the scene when the doctor is in the airlock. I thought that was spectacular. So we get to see a little athleticism from shooting.
Yeah.
And he did his own stunts, by the way. I saw the behind the scenes of that. He did his own stunts on that.
Yeah.
Nice.
So props to him. Morgan.
My last thing is that I just wanted to say that there is a, I'm a little jealous. There's a parthenogenesis machine on board the ships in Relativity, but spoiler, we never get to find out if they work or not. So,
interesting. Maybe anyway. In Relativity too. Oh, who knows?
I'm with Nicole. I really think if you understand the physics of that, he should have gone right out that hole in the airlock.
Yes.
It doesn't throw you into the nearest safe place. Yeah, he should be in space. But we'll pretend like that's okay.
And speaking of visuals of that, knowing what this creature is made of and seeing parts come off, I'm like, okay, I'm going to get sick if I keep watching this.
Yeah.
Well, before we move on from Space Babies, and Clarence, I cannot believe you did not bring this up, considering the fact you are the main host of our sister show discussing Trek. You did not bring up the Star Trek reference.
Yeah, the matter transporter. Then we had Star Trek colors as well for some of the uniforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely was in there.
I'm still waiting for that crossover. You know, it's like, we need to go see them sometime.
Yeah, like, what? He said, let's. Yes. I wonder what that was. Like,
he has canonized that Star Trek is real and it exists in the Doctor Who universe.
And before we finish this review tonight, there's going to be some more stuff that got canonized that I didn't think should have been canonized.
Yeah, we'll get there.
All right. So let me ask then for Devil's Chord. Summary view, Lee Shackelford, I want to start with you. Summary view, The Devil's Chord, what say ye?
I got to the end of it on my first watch and was once again saying, what the actual hell? But I thought, I guess what I'm doing is I'm looking for the wrong thing. And, you know, it's all about point of view. And I need to go back and just let it go. Let it go. And just enjoy this. And when I did that, when I said, this is silly and it's magical, then I had a great time with it.
Okay. So I do ask that the twist at the end, let's not talk about that too. Guess what? The end, because I do have thoughts on it. So I want to hold that. Let's not actually talk about that particular one to the
Can
end.
Can we sing
so,
about it?
Oh, yeah. Clarence, what say you? Summary view.
You know, I got to the end of this episode and I said to myself, what the actual hell? I didn't know what to think about it. I mean, I know I'm copying Lee, but I had no words. And my girlfriend looked on to me like, you really didn't like this episode. But alas, I watched it again. And I will say, if you dig a little bit deeper, it's one half an excellent episode. Hmm. To me, I can't abide by some of the shenanigans in the last half, but the first half is pretty rock solid in my opinion. But I was just kind of colored by the end of it, just kind of, you know, it's sort of like when I walked out of The Last Jedi. I was just like looking in. I think you were there, Cal. We all just like looking at each other like,
what? All right. So, you know, I'd love a good, you know, joke. I love a good pun. But so since I do not have a tuning fork, I thought I would bring my regular fork tonight. So, you know, but with that being said, I absolutely love this episode. I loved it from the beginning to the very end. I've watched it probably four or five times since then. And Clarence is like, what the hell?
Where do you find the time?
Yeah. I loved it. I loved everything about the Maestro. I loved the campiness of it. You know, this was Missy to the nth degree. You know, crank it up and just go with it. I absolutely freaking loved it. I didn't love the twist at the end at first, but we'll get to that later. But I didn't love the twist at the end at first, and then something, but we'll get to. And then I was like, okay, cool. But that being said, what did you guys think of the Maestro or Maestro? Clarence.
The beginning of this episode, it started off so freaking strong to me. Like, we're going to go back to 1925. We're going to establish that if you're playing this Devil's Chord from this brilliant composer, is that a real composer? I forget the guy's name, Turner or something. I can't remember him. But I was like, oh my God, this is going to be so amazing. And I really like the portrayal. I don't know the actor's real name, the Maestro actor's real name, but they were amazing. I'm like, oh, this is going to be great. And I really like what they established. So what was the question again? From
there, yeah, what did you think of the Maestro?
From there, again, the first half of the episode, I feel like everything was strong. I love the backstory we established with, oh, this is going to have implications going forward. We're going to see a lot of these type of characters maybe throughout this whole season. So I love that we established that. I love that there's a link to the toy maker there. And even the Maestro has, they have their own child that we might see again. But yeah, I love building all of that. But it was something about the second half of the episode, the way the Maestro played it. Well, maybe just not the character itself or the actor itself, but it just got so cheesy and campy and music off or whatever. It just got so weird. I was left like, what is going on? But again, if we're talking about the character themselves, I think it's a solid character, but just got a little too off the rails for me at the end.
All right, Lee, what about you? What do you say?
Yeah, if you've seen enough sort of magic stories like this, where there's going to be a duel of wizards, when the Maestro raised the violin and said, "Music battle," I said, "Oh,
yeah, God."
So
you did a Clarence Brown.
Yeah.
Oh God.
You did it simultaneously.
it's too bad because anyway, it's just that's a trope. That's a trope of magic stories. And I really enjoyed the energy and the investment of Jinx Monsoon's performance. I'm agreeing with Morgan Lee here in the chat, who's saying sometimes it just got loud for the sake of being loud. But I still admire that performer's range and focus as an actor. I'm always looking for that. Do they believe what they're saying? And are they trying to get what they want? You know, that's what makes a credible performance. And by golly, I never doubted it. I never doubted any of that, for as ridiculous as it is. But I've got a problem in the main, this is why I'm worried about this season, with the toy maker or Maestro or anybody else, about magic in this show where everything always comes back to science. I didn't like it in the Superman comics when I was growing up, when it turned out that was one of his vulnerabilities to magic. Actually, Mr. Mixes Piddleick was introduced long before that. And even though there's a science explanation for the Impossible Man in the Marvel universe, he's magic. And, you know, it always ends with you having to trick them. You know, so you know how this is going to go. That's the only way to deal with somebody with magical powers. You have to trick them into using them against themselves.
But isn't it is the same with, you know, the toy maker. You had to basically beat him at his own game.
Right. Because that's his one limitation. And
the whole season of that.
That's it. I'm just saying, well, if we know we're going to see that over and over again, that worries me. But Timescales is pointing out the Jinx Monsoon is American. So there you go. It's an entirely American cast with
an American doctor, an American villain. You've got that Murray Gold, who's from, you know, the Southwest.
Yeah. And all those actors playing the Beatles who were from, Georgia and Mississippi, I think.
Let me say this real quick. Morgan brings up a good point. Maestro or Maestro, however you want to say it, is that just another version of the Master? I think they could have come up with a better name for, and I know Maestro gets the idea from your conductor, but why not call her the conductor? You know, you had the toy maker. I know Maestro is a little more glamorous or whatnot.
And if you're the impresario of music, the title is Maestro. And
her impresario.
But that'd be kind of cool, actually. Call them, Anyway, trying to figure out pronouns there for a second reminds me that I didn't catch the first time that Harbinger says, "This is my dad."
Dad, yeah.
Really?
And once the Maestro has been vanquished, we get a quick glimpse that Harbinger is still there.
Exactly.
So that's just kind of an interesting little leading on to something else. But anyway, it's about magic. That's what I'm concerned about. But still, as silly as this whole thing was, I really enjoyed the maestro and the just over the topness of a lot of this stuff. I just, yeah.
Yeah, and Lee, before we move on, I have to agree with you, because we often want our science fiction to have some type of explanation. Mm-hmm. You know, any advanced technology can seem like magic.
Right.
You know, that I always do.
Yeah.
But with the toy maker and apparently the toy maker's descendants, it's something totally different.
Yeah. They're from another universe, and that is our science explanation. Yeah. So now the time scale's in the chat saying every Disney story includes magic. Is this part of the Disneyfication of Doctor Who? That and does but that mean
it if the toy maker was originally created in the 60s?
Right.
You know, and we used an in-story reason, meaning playing the game at the end or the edge of the universe.
That was the toy maker. That's true. Yeah.
You know, that brought this, that started it. So,
yeah.
You know, it wasn't that it's just popping up out of the blue. There was an in-story reason.
I still don't like the game on the end of the universe explanation. I never liked that. But there was something interesting that our doctor said in this episode, that the last run-in with the toy maker, Darner killed him. It's Blue Man 2.
And yeah, I can't do that again.
He cannot survive another one of those.
Yeah, but then he did.
but I took that more so as saying the bad generation happened once. It's not going to happen again.
Well, it kind of – so let me riff off of that a second. This doctor is very fearful. I'm wondering at some point that Shooty and Tennant are going to recombine that – because maybe a part of him is just missing. And he's always going to be fearful to some extent until he's whole again. Just a theory.
That works, because you either go down the idea of that happens, or in my brain canon, the 14th Doctor eventually just fades away, you know, at some point. But it logically makes sense that there would be a combination or a recombination at some point that would then send Shooty in a time loop back to where he was or something. I don't know. Hurts my head.
Anything's possible.
Anything's possible.
Yeah.
So let me ask, Morgan in the chat mentioned the Beatles, and I want to ask about the Beatles. Were they necessary in the story, or could this be a story that would have maybe worked better with no Beatles, but a random person who liked to make music and was the person who found the magic chord?
Well, the thing that I like best about this episode was that when all is lost, it's John and Paul who find the chord. So, and because I love them and I respect them as artists so much, especially as collaborators, that I just love that it was them. I was rooting for them. You know, George and Ringo are treated as being superfluous in this, but it's John and Paul. And for whatever reason, they are both drawn back to that piano. And if you know it as encyclopedically as I do, and I assume many, many, many other people do, that chord they come up with is the last chord of the Sgt. Pepper album. It ends the album. So they've clearly remembered it for 4 years after this to use again, because it has magic powers, they now know. I like that it's the Beatles, and I like that we see George Martin in the control booth there. We actually see him before we see the Beatles. You know, he's the producer who people call the fifth Beatle.
I've got a dog. It's not dead. I've got a dog. You don't have a dog. I don't have a cat.
It's all there. We're waiting for the magic to happen, and then you get that. And I don't think you'd fall as far if it was somebody we've never heard of or if it wasn't, you know?
I kind of like, and Nicole says we also see Scylla. I like that we're not one, we're not three, we like each other possibly, maybe. Or
yeah, possibly.
Like
yeah. I blush to admit that I had forgotten about Scylla Black, but her song, Anyone Who Had a Heart, is still the, well, you can't change this. It was the best-selling single in the 60s by a female artist. And she was kind of discovered by George Martin, and the Beatles really sort of encouraged her to do what she did. So it makes sense that she'd be at EMI with them and recording the same day and doing the same terrible not music that they're doing. So anyway, you
know, the time scale says the music was excellent, and it was interesting to see how the Beatles music didn't even have to be in it. Well done. And yeah. I do like the fact that they wrote it in story, a way to not use the Beatles music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Apparently their big hit, according to Doctor Who, is there's always a twist at the end.
Yes, which we will get to.
Okay.
But before we get to, I want to talk about the mystery of Ruby Sunday.
Wait, can I come in on the Beatles?
Yes, please. I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's what we're talking about. Yeah.
No, that's fine. There was definitely some nuance that about the Beatles that I just went completely over my head. I wish I would have known those 10 bits about Celia. Of course, you know, I know something about the Beatles. I know some of their songs, and I definitely know who are in the Beatles, but there's definitely some nuance that Lee just mentioned that, you know, really didn't appeal to me. So I'm wondering, like, how many other people out there? I know the Beatles are freaking huge. Everybody knows the Beatles. But I'm wondering how many other people that nuance was kind of lost on them.
Yeah, there's some flat-out Beatles trivia in this episode, you know, about the Abbey Road piano and things like that. So, yeah.
That's all true.
But
yeah, good stuff. And I have to say, the Beatles coming in to play the chord at the end, for me, it just felt flat for me. I was just like, oh my God, really?
Same here for me.
It had to happen because you have the Beatles in your episode. But yeah, I was just like, oh my God.
My thought was the Doctor had gotten all the other notes. Why couldn't he get that last one?
Well, even like, how did the Doctor somehow miraculously figure out the note that would banish Maestro to hell?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Somehow it happens.
When he says there's only 16 tree and possible combinations of chords, and he's right. You know, that's absurd. He's not going to find it in the next two.
But he also does say, you know, I'm able to smile because of all I have lost. And, you know, for whatever camp was in this, I do like the fact that they explored how music impacts society and seeing a lack of or an absence of
that was beautiful. That.
Now that I do like.
Right.
Let me ask you guys, what did you think of two things, but you can answer it at this, you know, in the same, it's because it's a double question. At the beginning, when we meet the Maestro and it's time to play the theme to go into the credits, we see and when Ruby is playing, she's playing her theme on the piano. Ruby's theme.
And when we come out of the title, she's listening to the Doctor Who theme on the jukebox that's in the TARDIS. Yes,
indeed. Thoughts.
What world are we living in? There's a bunch of fourth wall breaking in this episode. So
is there ever?
It could have something to do with the overall arc of the season, somehow leaning into that fourth wall breaking thing. But second time going back and watching it, it is really cool. I know why they did it. It is really cool to transition that way. But also, No. And it will kind of make sense that maybe the Maestro knows, kind of, because the god of music or whatever you want to call them. But, you know, by the same token, it's kind of canning, impacting, / mavity breaking. I don't know.
Yeah, it seemed to me a different thing that Maestro addresses the camera a couple of times, but then the Doctor at the end winked at us. Like, I'm not a fan. I don't like that. But if it's the kind of show where we will suddenly inexplicably go into a dance number, then okay.
Yeah. But let's hold it just a little. I know we're coming on an hour. Let's hold it real, real quick. I want to talk a little bit about the mystery of Ruby. We see snow on a face spaceship. We see Snow in the TARDIS.
Yeah.
We see the Maestro actually commenting, saying that there's something wrong with this creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Music, the Christmas song is coming from her.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts about the mystery of Ruby. And Clarence, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I have a theory. I have not proved this theory, but this is a feeling I have. We get this clear moment where we go to 1963 and a doctor says, I'm right over there. That's where I used to be. You know, I'm there with my granddaughter. So, something is telling me I'm probably totally wrong, but could Ruby be Susan? I have nothing leading me directly in that direction, but she just seems otherworldly. And just from all the clues we've gotten so far, I don't think we've gotten any clue to lead us exactly what or who she is, but there's something about her that's different. Mm-hmm. Could be a Time Lord, but who knows? I'm just getting to have a feeling that we might have a connection there. No proof.
Well, they're up on the roof standing next to a billboard advertising the music act that Susan's listening to on her transistor radio in Unearthly Child.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so cool.
See?
Chat has crashed for me, by the way. Is yours still working?
Yeah, it's still going through.
Okay, good. I can't see what people are saying, but yeah. Anyway, so there's that. So, you know, you may be right, except that it's 63. They leave pretty quickly, don't they? They don't. I was going to say, that means they're still there. No, it doesn't. They're about to go to prehistoric Earth. And then to Skaro.
So any other thoughts on Ruby?
The song in her heart, or the song that the maestro says ungodly or unruly about her. Of course, we're giving or tying back to the Christmas episode or her being born on Christmas. Interesting there. Again, I have no clue what's special about her, but, you know, we'll find out this season, I guess.
And, you know, I did not. Nicole brings up an interesting point. The diegetic and the non-diegetic sound. I did not know what that was until this. So I actually learned something. You know, one is the sounds that the audience can hear, but the characters can't. In other words, Murray Gold's score. Right. And then, of course, the sounds that they can hear.
Exactly. Yeah, that's because you haven't taken my intro cinema class.
Yes, exactly.
But the two famous examples are Rear Window, which does not have a music score, but there's a guy who lives in the apartment across the way who is always playing the piano. And so his music is the music for the film. And everybody, the definition is exactly right. Everybody in the film can hear it, unlike in other movies. Cool. And in American Graffiti, it's all on the radio, and everybody's got a radio. You know, yes. In their cars. So, there's no score written for it, but you get to lots of early 60s rock and roll everywhere.
So, Lee, what do you think? What do you think the mystery of Ruby is leading us to?
I'm intrigued by what people were saying in the chat, including the remark about the – because the word diegetic, of course, jumped out of the show at me. And our friends here are sort of postulating that is this WandaVision? are we going to find out that because it would allow for things like a musical number suddenly breaking out, or I mean a dance number, or the people doing takes to the camera and so on, which are usually not part of the rules of the show. Is there a TV show inside the TV show? And is that why the doctor can make reference to Star Trek and let's go see those guys, and that Ruby can be listening to the Doctor Who theme on their jukebox, which that means the Doctor Who exists inside Doctor Who.
What if Ruby is not a Time Lord, not from wherever the Doctor's from,
not
Susan? What if Ruby is one of the Pantheon, and is like maybe the storyteller? You know,
I can see that.
Let's call her the spirit of, I won't say spirit of Christmas,
spirit of television.
but the spirit of television, and yeah. and maybe it's sort of like a Moffat thing hidden in plain sight. Mm-hmm. Remember that image that we got of the penultimate, whatever, you know, the part one of the two-part, thank you, finale, The Legend of Ruby Sunday, is a television camera.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, when we saw her first, she was being interviewed.
She was being interviewed for what? Television.
Television, exactly. That camera was there.
So maybe the doctor is trapped inside of a TV show.
Yeah, it would be cool if she's yet again another one of the Toymaker's progeny. I guess that's what you're saying, right?
Yes, that's what I'm thinking.
She's part of the pantheon.
Yeah, and as Wingrace did in his review, he mentioned that he thinks all of this is fake. All this might not be real. So that kind of leads into his theory just a little bit.
All right.
I'm buying it. I think that's about as good a theory as I heard so far.
I'm going to proceed with that assumption because I really like it.
So what did you guys think of the musical number, the twist at the end?
Can I start?
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm.
So the music before was purposely bad because the Devil's Court, and again, the Devil's Court, is that like a play on the Devil's music being the rock and roll in the 50s and 60s? Is that a play?
No, that story that the composer tells at the beginning, that's perfectly true. There were notes that you weren't supposed to play together because somebody had this goofy idea that it would bring the devil. But yeah, it's just, and as he says, it's just a tritone, and it's in a lot of things. And Nicole in the chat mentioned the Dance Macabre. It has that tritone in it, and that's what Maestro is dancing to at one point, is the Dance Macabre. Anyway.
All right. And guys, do not look at the chat because I don't want you to be spoiled.
Good. I can't see
where I'm going in the chat.
That being said, the dance number at the end, we mentioned it before we broke the fourth wall. And I just thought the song. Now, honestly, the dancing was fine. I thought it was fine, but to me, the song was just bad. I'm like, we just had a whole episode with bad songs, and then like you're going to give another bad song at the end. I don't think it was bad on purpose. I think it was just a bad song, in my opinion. So I was just like scratching my head and like, this is not very uplifting. Nice dance number, but yeah. And then the musical notes on Abbey, was it Abbey Road? The musical notes as they cross the street?
Yes, right. Yeah.
What's going on?
But remember, I took that as the Maestro's domain lingering, sort of like he was able to, you know, use the mallet to split the TARDISes.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know, that's how my headcanon, you know, said that.
A little too poetic, but
the TARDIS is a percussion instrument at the end.
Yes,
yeah.
I don't.
The doors at the end, like really, what is even going on here?
All right, so Lee, what did you think about the twist at the end?
Well, I love the fact that, of course, there's a dance that is the twist, and that you know there's variations on that. So I like that this episode had a twist at the end. Ha ha. I mean, and that the composer the pianist in the middle of that party is Murray Gold. So there he is.
A little cameo
there. I enjoyed it. I've been going around humming it.
It stuck in my head too.
I give it a 7 'cause you can dance to it.
Yeah. And speaking of dancing, the two dancers that were dancing with, the doctor and Ruby.
Yeah.
Are two of the dancers from Strictly Come Dancing, which if you're in the UK, that's sort of like Dancing with the Stars in the US.
Ruby mentioned that was one of the things that she wanted, or the proofs that she knew that music exists because of Strictly. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of, there was a throwback to Classic Who with the doctor taking Ruby to the present. And similar to the doctor taking
Pyramids of Mars.
Yes, Pyramids of Mars with Sarah Jane to prove that there is an impact of what you're having. So that was cool. And another thing, thank you, Nicole, for bringing it up because you and I are right there together. June Hudson was the elderly lady playing the
Claire de Lune.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she was also a costume designer who designed the Fourth Doctor's second outfit, the red, mm-hmm. burgundy,
the maroon, you know, burgundy maroon, yeah. scarf, yeah. Peter Davidson's cricket outfit, yeah.
Yes.
So that was fun that she gets to be in there. And I think did a creditable little performance there, getting the wits scared out of her by the maestro coming out of her
Indeed.
Piano.
Indeed.
So
I just heard in my head, oh, Benny.
All right, well,
that was not June Hudson.
Do you want me to tell you why I liked the twist at the end?
Sure.
This is, and I may be totally off my rocker here, but my brain literally just was like, oh, wow, he is so freaking clever, smart doing this. The twist at the end is nothing to do with the song. He's telling you there's always a twist at the end. Look at the credits. Susan Twist is in the credits of every freaking episode because she is in every episode.
And I don't care.
And it's going to be funny when she turns out to be Susan.
Well, okay. All right. Well, you might have something there, but.
And that's the twist.
Wow. Yeah. That is deep dive nerdiness. That is, yeah.
But why else would you do that if there's not a twist at the end? The only, because every episode, with the exception of the giggle, she is listed in the credits of every single episode since then.
So there's always
she was
a twist.
In Wild Blue Yonder. She was in The Church. She was in these two episodes.
Mm. So what the song is doing is pointing us to that name in the credits.
And the fact of there's always a twist in the end.
Always a twist in the end.
And there's something about her. If you will notice, the 14th Doctor and Donna were outside crashing into the apple tree when she was with, Isaac Newton. All right. Mm. In the next episode, the doctor did not see her when she was asking, can you play this song? The doctor and Ruby had turned away from the viewfinder when they showed the crew, and she was in the recordings of the crew. As the lunch lady, they turned away when she was talking, and then she had her back to them, so they never see her. I'm just saying she's going to be important. I'm just saying she is going to be important.
Yeah, so that was her saying, Sabetta, you never seen a TARDIS before? Yeah.
No, that was somebody else.
Okay.
And I really don't get it.
Yeah.
I've forgotten about her. Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot to continue moving my pictures along. I think I have a picture of her. Hold on.
This is nice.
Really quick.
Mm-hmm. John Lennon's guitar.
There was always, I may have just said that.
Yeah, the wardrobe change was, we were looking at the pictures before the season came out. I was like, how's his hair follicles growing and all this stuff? Yeah. But I like the way they did it in this episode. Yeah. It actually made a lot of sense.
I got a million wigs.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that's my thought. And she is playing a different character in every episode so far. So I just thought that's what that meant. And then that just made it cool to me.
I'll look into it.
So
was it worth the 2-minute dance number?
Yeah.
With the terrible song.
There's also the joke that in a show like this, there is often a plot twist at the end and there's the dance, the twist. So yeah. Mm. But he winks at the camera. I don't know. And it starts raining inside the studio as well.
Yeah, that's true too. All right. So let's go into we are over our usual time, but considering the fact we're doing two episodes.
Yeah.
It's all right then.
Yeah.
So let's go into favorite quote. And with favorite quote, do either of you have a Space Babies favorite quote?
Well, I absolutely do. And I thought we might've all picked the same one.
All right. So Space Babies, Lee, favorite quote.
I don't have a people. I don't have a home. But I don't have a job either. I don't have a boss or taxes or rent or bills to pay. I don't have a purpose or a cause or a mission. But I have freedom.
good stuff, man.
Absolutely. All right. Favorite quote, Space Babies, Clarence.
Push the button.
All right. Lee, that almost was mine, but something told me that you were going to pick that. So I put as mine, nobody grows up wrong. You are what you are, and you are wonderful and magnificent.
There you go.
So that was my favorite quote. So while we're on favorite quotes, let's keep going. Devil's Chord. Clarence, favorite quote from Devil's Chord.
Oh, man. I actually didn't have one from this episode.
Nothing wrong with that. You, maybe yours was, I hear music.
There's always a twist in the end. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
There you go. All right, Lee, favorite quote.
It's like sometimes late at night, I get this thought, like it's so far away, but it's a note, a single note, and then a second, and a third, and a fourth, and a fifth, and you put them together, and it feels like the most holy thing on this earth. I think Paul really thinks like that. Yeah.
Nice. So for me, my favorite quote was, oh, I would never call myself that, but I have loved and I have lost, and I can only smile like this because I have lost so much. Love that.
Yeah.
Love, love, love.
It's a great line.
All right. So favorite scene. So favorite scene. From Space Babies, I'll start with that. I will say the opening scene in the TARDIS. I really, really enjoyed that, even though it was exposition and retelling what we already know. And mainly why I like that is because we heard Murray Gerald's theme of This is Gallifrey. So that was cool when he was talking about Gallifrey. Oh, and one other thing really quick, speaking of Murray Gold, when the maestro was playing the music in the second time when they're, you know, in the darkness and she's at the piano again. At one point, she plays Sound of Drums, the Sims master theme. Dun, 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 well, dun, 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 dun.
They actually knocked on the inside of the piano case like that when they appeared the first time.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
and one other thing, we heard the giggle. We didn't mention that. She did the.
That's true.
So,
yeah.
All right.
Trade.
So, favorite scene, Clarence, favorite scene, what say ye?
Space Babies, I like the Green River, Wyoming scene with the dinosaurs and the implications of the butterfly effect. Oh, that was good fun. Even though I had problems with the logic later, but I thought it was a fun scene.
Yeah.
All right, Lee. Favorite scene?
Oh, no contest. The Doctor and Poppy. Popsicle. Captain Poppy, when was the last time you had a hug?
Aw.
Never. Everybody in the audience reaches out to hug Poppy.
Yes. All right. Devil's Chord. Favorite scene, Clarence Brown. What say you?
I think there was something pretty touching about the Doctor standing on that roof, saying that right over there is where I am also. And, you know, just bringing all the nostalgia back to that, to the beginnings of the show. And you can't help but love, you know, kind of that call back there of being almost in the same place at the same time. Thought that was wonderful.
Okay. I agree with you that. So favorite scene. And I was just reading comments and totally forgot where we were. We're at favorite scene, and we are where? Where did we just get to?
Devil's Chord. Favorite Devil's scene Chord. It's only.
Thank you, sir. Lee Shackelford. Favorite.
That's why I'm on camera doing this.
Yeah.
This guy.
Yeah, it's over here. The montage of people on near Abbey Road being moved by Ruby's piano piece. Yeah. I loved all of that so much. And
yeah, we should totally reshoot that scene with us just hanging out the window doing stupid stuff.
And you know what I loved about that scene? It was so subtle when the woman, when they actually, you know, stopped playing the music and she was like, no. or something like that. That was very well done.
Yeah. We know she's the one who's going to go inside and try to continue it. And she does.
Yes. That was sad. My favorite scene of this would have to be the very beginning with the that leads into the opening sequence. And just a shout out to the opening sequence. They have added some additional footage in that flyby scene where the TARDIS shoots out of the time vortex and into something else. You've got some added, and they've redone the logo. It's a little different. It's the same logo, but it's colored, you know, it has a little bit of difference in it. So that was really, really cool.
Maybe different every time.
Maybe so. It's not like we hadn't seen that before.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
A twist at the beginning.
And at the end and in between. So for everyone in the chat, if you would like to let us know your ratings on a scale of 1 to 5, if you want to start doing that in the chat. But for final ratings, Space Babies, Lee Shackelford, what say ye?
I think I'm going to have to give it 3.5 snotty wipes, I think.
3.5 snotty wipes.
Yeah.
Clarence Brown, Space Babies, what say ye?
I'm going to give this one 3.2 spaceship farts out of 5.
Mm.
The methane was building up. I mean,
I'm going to give this 3.5 Doctor and Rubies out of 5. That's because that's the saving grace for me, 3.5. All right. And it looks like for Space Babies, Morgan Lee is giving 2 nannies out of 5. Space Babies, she's giving 1 nappy, she being Janet, 1 nappy out of 5. Nicole is giving Space Babies 1 out of 5. And Lee Jen is giving 3 nappies out of 5, saying it was fun. Awesome. So now moving on into the Devil's Chord. And Chad, if you would like to continue giving your ratings. Lee Shackelford, Devil's Chord, what say ye?
I'm going to give that a, I'm going to say 3.5 again. And as weird as this is, 3.5 of John Lennon's guitar.
Nice.
Okay. Clarence Brown, what say you?
I think you guys talked me up a little bit on this one. I'm going to give this one 3.7 silent montages 5.
Oh, that was so good. The silent.
Oh, thing. Yeah.
That was cool, I forgot to mention that. That was me too. So good. All righty. For me, I'm going to actually give this 4.25 Maestros 5. I just love the Maestro. I want to see more of the Maestro, and I just love the 15th Doctor. So 4.25 5. Going back to our chat, let's see. Wingrace says 2 spaceship cheeks 5. The time scale says for Space Babies, 5 out of 10 of 70 ratings on the time scale. So that gives a matching 2.5 out of 5. Hey, I got you there. I like that. Lee Jen for the second episode says 3.75 troubles 5. The Ensign killed the last 0.25. Morgan Lee says 2 terrible twists at the end 5. Laugh out loud. Janet says Devil's Chord 2.5 pianos. Wynn Grace says 4 Time Lord titles 5.
Yeah.
And the time scale says the Devil's Chord rates 7.5 tenths. Got it. Now I get it. Out of 63 ratings on the time scales. So I give it a matching 4 out of 5. That made my head hurt, but I still like it. And that's all right then.
Can't do maths.
I can't do math. I can talk, but I can't do math. That's what AI is for. All right, gentlemen, anything else before we close this session out?
So dance party, everybody? No, kidding.
There's always a twist
at the end. And there's always a Moffat in the next episode. Or
yeah, that's true. Next time trailer made me eager to see what's coming next.
Yes.
I think a little darker turn and Moffat script and yeah.
Yes.
We shall see. We shall see. And we'll see who if knows? Something silly happens.
Or
Lord no.
Or maybe something spoilerific.
Oh, could be.
Which would
could
be terrific.
Oh, the planet that the space babies are orbiting is Pacifico del Rio. The peacefulness of the river.
Ooh.
Just nice. Saying.
And they have released a few images. This is no spoilers, but there are clerics in this next episode.
Okay.
And the first time we saw clerics, they were escorting around a certain prisoner.
That's true.
In the time of angels.
That's right.
So just saying. Okay. It's not
in some timeline. Yeah, she's in some timeline. She's still in prison. So
yeah, somewhere out there, there's a river. All right. So for everyone in the chat, thank you for going down this interesting tale with us. This was fun. I was actually nervous about what you guys would think about this one. So I'm glad we were able to talk it out. I want to give a big shout out to Nicole. This is the first time she has been in our chat, and it was awesome having you here. The time scales, Lee Jin, Janet, and Morgan, as well as Wynn Grace and Tasha, and anybody else who has watched us or is currently watching us. Thank you for watching us. Thank you for spending time with us, as Lee says. And guess what? We will be back next time and next week with more brand new Doctor Who, and I can't wait. So we will be back next time.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.